sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Icon is still tweeting. Housing starts take a tumble. Market stages a comeback in the last couple of days of the week, and Bomber is out, at least in 12 months, and the market cheers. All this and much more on episode number 327 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Hey there, it's the end of August, kind of the end of summer for us right now, and maybe we'll get out of these very slow volume days with markets being choppy in all directions in the last half hour of the day, which is always something that has befuddled me in terms of, you know, what is the point? Seems like it's all about a basketball game or a football game. The last couple of minutes that it comes down to, and all of a sudden, you know, the whole game is right there, just right there at the, you know, the last few seconds that all that matters. And who cares about the rest of the day? You take fundamentals, throw it right out the window, because when you start looking at that kind of action, what you see is a lot of ETFs are really starting to make the market swell or drop because of the volume that is being pushed in, or it's simply futures that are being used to do so. Whatever it may be, we did see a bit of a recovery at the end of last week, and some of that was due to some very strange circumstances. The first one was, if you think about it, right, markets were coming down and bond prices were also coming down. And bond prices coming down means that interest rates were moving higher. We saw a 2.91 and change print on the yield on the 10-year bond last week. And that was starting to get into territory that people were getting very concerned about. And I think we had a total of, you know, upwards of maybe 9 days in a row that bond prices had been dropping and yields had been rising in a concerning move, and thinking that, maybe there is something to be said about this tapering that's coming in September. Now, even though Bernanke did backtrack on it or kind of walk backwards on his commentary a month or so ago and everybody cheered, we're seeing a lot more commentary out that, hey, you know what? The economic circumstance is such that maybe we can start tapering a little bit. And that has been coming from the Fed members. Now, many of the ones that are saying that, of course, this is the usual, you know, the usual way things go. You just have to get used to it. As annoying as it is, what we're seeing is that the non-voting members are the ones that usually come out with the things that the markets aren't going to like, because you can always temper that with the other side. Well, that wasn't said by somebody that was voting. Then we had Lagarde, who was at the IMF, come out this weekend and say that, hey, you know what? Countries better be really careful about how they withdraw stimulus. Because if you withdraw too fast, hey, there could be a lot of problems. There's still a lot of stimulus needed in Japan and in Europe. And what's interesting about that is, first of all, you got to wonder how much more stimulus can be put into Japan. The yen was as low as about 96 last week, or maybe as strong as 96 as compared to the dollar. And it started to creep up at the end of the week. As a matter of fact, you saw a lot of things really come off. You saw that commodities were coming off a bit, but then gold staged an impressive rally, touching almost to the penny at 1400 at the later part of the day on Friday with some of the news that came out. Now, let's kind of go through that. And this is a great timeline to see how markets are reacting and to get a real full flavor and feeling for what's going on. Now, we're going to talk about a lot of things today, but I just want to get this out because I thought it was really fascinating. Now, remember last week we talked about how the key reversal indicator was in the -3. It was kind of getting towards the maybe -4 area. -5, -6 is what I'm going to be looking for a very important point that, hey, wait a minute, this is really an oversold level that you really want to wake up to. Now, -4 is getting there. We had a little bit of a cluster where we calculate a couple of the moving averages alongside of this. And if we see that, that is really starting to say, hey, wait, this is getting a little bit out of hand. And we saw that actually on Wednesday. Now, if you remember what happened Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, markets came off pretty well. And there was a couple of big attempts for a rally there, but they came off nonetheless, and the markets were pretty much in the red. The Dow was really the worst hit of them all. Now, Thursday comes out the initial claims numbers, which were worse than were expected by about 25,000, I think it was. So the initial jobless claims. And initially, there was a drop in the futures. And then, wow, hey, wait a minute. Let's rethink this. If there's a, wow, if we have worse unemployment, a worse employment, you know what? That means that maybe the Fed's going to stay there for a while longer. That's the only thing that can explain with what happened, because the future started to come up pretty substantially. Now, there was some other news around the world. We saw that the China Manufacturing Index, this is the preliminary market number through HSBC, that was a little bit better. As a matter of fact, it was the best it's been in many months, and it was over the 50 mark, which is the consideration for whether or not it is a contraction or whether or not it is an expansion. So we're over 50. That's good. Now, put that together. We got a big market rally, got a little bit of an oversold situation going on, and then you come into Friday, and yep. You know, markets are kind of just grinding around, trying to, you know, figure out what the heck happened on Thursday, especially with the fact that the NASDAQ was down for over 3 hours. I mean, completely shut down. We're looking around and we get all these halt notices that come flying out of our computers on Thursday. We knew that there was something with the options market, but all of a sudden, they shut the entire NASDAQ down. I think there was a few stocks trading, but really it was like, what happened? Everything was nothing moving. It was just flat on the screen. What happened? We still don't know. Some kind of a glitch in information flow through, they say. But they are quick to tell us that it's not anything that was malicious. It wasn't a terrorist attack. It wasn't any kind of worm or virus or any kind of hack. It was just some kind of glitch, which I am not sure about if I'm happy or not. Or, you know, I'm not sure if I'd be happier if they said it was some kind of a, you know, a hack, you know, because you can solve those problems. You can figure out what happened and kind of close it up. And, you know, that whatever that hole was that was infected, if you will, well, you can do something to defend against that. Now, if you have a situation where we don't know why it happened and simply it was the information that was just not flowing freely and it was some kind of a oddity, well, how are you going to fix that? You're not going to come up with some solution to that, and hopefully they will. This is not the first time we're seeing these kind of problems. Now we have the third and fourth largest exchanges. Edge and Bats are trying to potentially merge. So I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute. These guys can't get their acts together individually. Now they're going to merge. So now we have even more of a chance to have all sorts of trading nightmares go on. Well, we'll see what happens. What was really fascinating, though, I'll tell you, usually, or at least you would think, that a shutdown of the NASDAQ would, you know, do something to at least slow or drop stocks out of concern that, you know, you're not sure where you're going to be positioned. The stocks are halted, so you don't know where they're going to open. So you kind of back off a little bit. But when the stocks opened again, there was hardly a blip. It was like just a time warp. Nothing really changed in value. I mean, I saw a lot of stocks move. There was no big movements. So I don't know if it was simply because everybody left by that time. It was late in the day. So maybe everybody, you know, the traders just said, ugh, who needs this crap? They just left and decided, you know what, we'll pick it up tomorrow. And they did. The next day, even though this was a pretty good day on the markets on Thursday, the next day, markets were kind of trying to digest some negative information. As a matter of fact, the information was really negative. It was about the new home sales, and they came in about 100,000 less than expected, or about 80-something thousand. That is an enormous, just a mind-blowing number. And a lot of that probably is going to be blamed on, it could be some seasonality in there, but it's also going to be blamed on the higher interest rates. Now, it doesn't really make too much sense that you could blame a lot of it on the interest rates, because if you think about it, you would expect that as interest rates were rising as quickly as they did, people would go out and start to put their commitments on houses and try to lock in mortgages as soon as possible. So you should see, at least in theory, a rush towards getting a home. an increase in that. Now, maybe we saw that in the last few months, and that's what happened here, that that was just exhausted. But we came in almost 100,000 homes less, and that really shook the home builder stocks. The markets came off until the realization came back to them that, hey, wait a minute, we got Microsoft. Because Steve Ballmer said earlier this morning that he's going to be retiring in the next 12 months, and the stock took off. Microsoft, when the announcement came out, was up like 9%. The NASDAQ, which is heavily weighted of the top 10, the Qs, the NASDAQ 100, heavily weighted with companies like Microsoft and Apple, of course, and Google. Well, that really punched that up higher immediately. You saw about a 17-point move on the NASDAQ just on the initial announcement by Ballmer. And a lot of people saying, well, you know, Ballmer has really held back the company for many years. And you know, the innovation and the expansion, and it just really hasn't done anything under him. It's become a cash cow, and it's become a kind of a utility, paying a nice dividend. But yet, it just hasn't had any advancements. And as a matter of fact, we could probably go back and say they've had a lot of flops. Things like the Zune, and more so probably the Windows 8 is probably one of the things they're going to be focusing on. But nonetheless, within about 12 months, he says that he's going to be retiring. And I guess as a going away present, he got a nice bump to his stock price. Microsoft hasn't moved like that in years. That was quite incredible, especially on the heels of a pretty, you know, dour earnings report that we saw, what, a month ago? So markets right now are trying to digest direction. Then on top of that, we have two things that happen. So we see that the numbers come down very substantially on the housing. Markets move higher, but primarily due to some of the excitement with the underlying Microsoft bid. So that helped out markets pretty well. And the overflow from the day before, possibly. And then you see this gigantic spike in oil midday because the concern came back about the Mideast again. What's going on there? So we saw about 106 print from about 104 the day before. And gold and silver took off just when the print came out from the housing, because the thought is that, wait a minute, we can't have housing slow down, so the Fed's going to come back. This is all related to the Fed. That's exactly what's going on. It's all related to the Fed. All right, enough with the markets for a second. Let's kind of talk about some other things that are going on. Well, I guess we could talk about Carl Icahn and his little sneakiness. That guy, wow, he has been really active lately and being as sneaky as ever. You know, when the markets were closed on Thursday, the NASDAQ, that was, when it shut down for the halt and that whole fiasco that went on, sometime in the middle of it, he came out with a tweet about how, wow, you know, now I'm having dinner in September that is planned with Tim Cook, and we're going to talk about the dividends again and a buyback, and it's going to be, what was the word he used? He said something like it's going to be of magnitude. So I'm not exactly sure what the whole point of that was, because if you really dissect what he said, first of all, he said that there was some planning going on or something. Didn't really say that he had a committed appointment. That's first of all. Second of all, what is he trying to do? He's trying to do the buyback announcement on his own, trying to force the hand, or at least try to play the hand that there's going to be a buyback and push everybody in. And, you know, there was a downstroke of Apple prior to that and kind of did climb up into the news, I guess. But I got to tell you something. Very bad precedent. If we allow Carl Icahn and whoever else it may be to put these kind of tweets out that are really non-publicly confirmed and questionable at best, why are we going to allow, or how do we stop the pump and dumpers from doing their thing? And you say, well, you know, Icahn, well, he's, you know, he's an icon. And, you know, he's heavily scrutinized. And, of course, you know, he's not going to do anything that's going to be illegal. And he's talking about Apple here. We're not talking about a small biotech company, right? Well, still, the end product is the same. So take Icahn out of the picture and put just any old person that's going to be tweeting with a big following. Well, there's a celebrity, a sports, you know, star, whoever it is. Hey, another money manager, and then put a smaller company on there that maybe has a high short interest, and what do you get? You get a big short squeeze. And on top of it, how do you really verify this information? I mean, is the SEC going to call up and find out and look at the calendar of Carl Icahn and Tim Cook? Because you know, it's kind of crazy. And frankly, if I was Tim Cook, I'd be pissed. I would be absolutely pissed. I'd cancel. Because what kind of crap is this? So basically what you're doing is you're manipulating the stock by my agreement to have dinner or lunch with you, or maybe even a call in to schedule with me that I haven't even confirmed yet. It stinks to high hell. And I think that there's a lot of people that think that. I saw a lot of conversation from not only some of the trading rooms, but also some of people that I know, and I had some discussions about this. And I think everybody's pretty much thought that this was a little bit of over the top. Maybe not jumping the shark yet, but over the top. And to a point that it was very disappointing. And, you know, this is a guy who has a new toy. He has a new way to move things with not only maybe appearances on various talk shows and radio and maybe quotes in newspapers, but now all of a sudden he has this new toy where he can just go out there and blast whatever he wants and whenever he wants. I don't know. I don't know what you think about it, but I think it's kind of a little bit ugly to speak of. And, you know, it's just something that is really questionable in terms of practice overall. The other thing I'll mention is that, you know, earnings season has wrapped up a bit. And where are we? And what have you done and what you have not done? I mean, we're in a, you know, the markets are right now in a bit of a questionable area here. Yeah, some optimism is built because there has been, you know, some decent earnings from some companies and some good outlook. And then on the back end of the earnings season, we had some real negative numbers. I mean, you know, you look at a lot of things that went on at the back half of the earnings season, and really, I think it reversed all the good that happened and potentially good that happened with the banks in the beginning in terms of what the actual numbers were. You know, not from the perspective of the overall, but the overall still wasn't that good. We talked about this, you know, five times already, and it hasn't changed. There have been a lot of beats. The beats have been some of the lowest in terms of percentage of, compared to what the expectations were. And revenues were kind of flat. And there was a lot of guidance on the downside. So, you know, you kind of look at that and you have to say, you know, where do we go here, especially if there's going to be a higher interest rate environment and potentially some of the stimulus is withdrawn. That's something you have to look at. Maybe China will come in to save the day. Maybe. Maybe the better than expected European sentiment that we saw last week will come in and instill a lot of confidence. Possibly. I'd like to see the emerging markets do something with more than just follow the leader, you know, really have some kind of a decent overall economic and sentiment change. That would be really nice to see. We'll see. Now, I got this great book. Let me see what this was. This is a cool book. This is not, you know, this is small. It's, I don't even know. It's like 4 inches wide, you know, across the front of the cover by about 7 inches tall. And it's from The Economist. And it's called Pocket World in Figures, 2014 edition. They just sent it to me. I just started thumbing through this. This is one of these really cool books that you could just buzz through and find these really cool little facts. And I just want to share a few of those. I thought it was really cool. I don't know. I just opened up a page here. Let's see what this is. This is Facebook users, which, by the way, closed over $40 on Friday. Pretty impressive. The United States has 158 million Facebook users as of May 2013. Wow. Now, next up, I don't know what you're thinking, what country it would be, the second most Facebook users. I mean, what do I think? It wouldn't be this answer that I'm seeing here. All right, well, you have in your mind what the next couple may be. This is Brazil is number two with 71 million, India with 63 million, Indonesia with 47 million, then Mexico, Turkey, United Kingdom, then the Philippines. Germany's number 10. Pretty amazing. Now, per 1,000 in population, Monaco, 984 out of 1,000 people, it's a small place, use Facebook. We're about 60% of the U.S. uses Facebook. Kind of interesting. Here's some other interesting things. I mean, again, just thumbing through this thing here. Highest male life expectancy. Monaco wins that one with 85.7. And where are we on this here? We're not on the top 15, I'll tell you that much, so that's not that good. Highest female life expectancy. Monaco, again, we'll just discount that. Denmark is number two, then Japan. Yep, U.S. is on that one either. Oh, boy. We're not doing well on that. Let's kind of, well, here's the lowest life expectancy. This is Sierra Leone with 48 years old is the average life expectancy there. No, we're not on there either. Interesting. Okay, let's take a look at this here. Most air travel, millions of passengers, kilometers per year. United States with 1 million, a trillion. Wow. Busiest airports in the world, Atlanta Hartsfield, 95.7 total passengers in millions. Then Beijing, London, Tokyo. That's kind of cool. Let's see what we got here. Okay. Largest recipients of bilateral and multilateral aid as of the end of 2011. Kind of a long time ago. Number one, Afghanistan. Then Congo. Then Ethiopia. Vietnam, Pakistan. Let's see. Per head, the West Bank and Gaza gets $607 per person in aid. Then Cape Verde and Kosovo. This is a cool. I thought it was a really cool book. Highest economic growth. That's page 30. Average annual percent increase in real GDP. Azerbaijan, 14%. Then Qatar, Macau. What is this now? Guinea, Angola, China, Myanmar. They're not on here. Let's see what we have. Biggest economies we're on. Of course, we're number one with GDP of in billions, 14 million of billions. In China, Japan, Germany, France, Brazil. Purchase power, we're number one there too. Let's see. Population, that's not a good one. Let's see. Largest populations in millions. China, India, United States, number three. Fastest growing population is Qatar, United Arab Emirates, Bahrain. What is that? Eritrea. Anybody ever hear of that? Niger, Sierra Leone, Kuwait. Slowest growing populations, Moldova, Georgia, Ukraine, Bulgaria, Latvia, Lithuania. Boy, that whole section not doing so well there. Belarus, Romania. Let's see. I'll do one more and we'll be done. I think this is, I hope you're not boring you to death here. The back of the book, by the way, has all of the country profiles. Tons of country profiles. And gives you all the GDP numbers and the unemployment numbers and all that. Let's see. Let's see here. Okay. Source of carbon dioxide emissions as a percent of the total emissions in each country, 2009. Estonia, Malta. Oh, that's not so much fun. Let's see. All right, how about this one? Number of species under threat. Indonesia has 184. Mexico, 100. India, 94. Birds in Brazil is 122. Fish, India, 212. Anyway, so there's a lot of internet stuff here. Telephones, computers. Well, this is interesting. Canada is the number one user of computers per 100 people in the world. In the Netherlands, they have 129. They have 129 computers for every 100 people. Where are we? Let's see. We're 96. They're getting ripped. Maybe there's some old ones going on there or something like that. And I guess we'll look at the last thing, the World Giving Index, the top givers as a percent of population. Australia and Ireland are tied for first place with 60%. Canada, 58%. New Zealand and United States are tied with 57%. Well, that's good to see. We end on a very positive note there on the givers. Anyway, Pocket World in Figures, 2014 edition by The Economist. This was courtesy of Harding Loevner. This is the name of a company, Harding/Loevner, who I guess... What do they do? Oh, they're mutual funds. That was nice of them. Thank you so much, guys. I appreciate that. All right. Since it is the kind of the end of the summer, back to school time, when we're getting ready after Labor Day for those in the Northeast and some parts around the country in the South, we have a little bit of a early start. School's in the second week already in the junior side. And, of course, college kids are off for a while now already. Now, since it is that, I thought we would really focus in on some educational points and some things that you need to know about to really start the year. Because when it comes to trading, when it comes to investing, really you look at the calendar and you see that this summer lull, that summertime, a lot of traders are off. They're in their what seems to be ridiculously priced rentals now in the Hamptons and Montauk out on the island and all over the country, of course, because things have changed a bit. You don't just have simply a, the New York region that where all the traders are, because now it's... we've uncoupled all of that, and now there is everywhere, trading everywhere. And there's a preponderance, of course, in London, Tokyo, and in New York. But yeah, at the same time, it's in Chicago, too. But, it's not the same as it was at one time. But nonetheless, you still have that situation where the summertime calendar comes into play, lower volumes. And it's always a good time to stop and refresh and kind of think about the things and the tools and all the different stuff you have out there that is available to you. So I want to just take a little while to talk about a few things because I got some emails in and I get them in regularly. Thank you so much for those to send to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And I wanted to talk about some of the things that are out there and some of the things that you need to know about that are kind of stirring, brewing, and we're working on. Well, you know about that, I hope you know about that, I have two books out. One is called The Winning Investor, and one is called The Disciplined Investor. So you can get those through Amazon or bookstores or wherever else that's out there that is carrying them. The Disciplined Investor is a few years old, written back in 2007, but there are some real core fundamentals that you need to know about there. It talks about the whole quantitative and the whole fundamental and the whole technical side of analyzing markets and really understanding why those go together, why you need to do your quantitative research first, getting yourself a list and a screen of those companies that meet certain criteria, then break it down and look at exactly the underlying components of the fundamentals. Kind of like you're in a parking lot full of brand new cars and kind of, all right, I want a sports car. And I want maybe I'll look at the coupes. That's it. Okay. Then you go under the hood. What are the details? What are the components that are making this up? And why is this something that I want to really focus in on? So you go into the fundamentals. And then what you do is, the last step is that fundamentals aside, you want to look at the technicals. You want to look at the chart. You want to know when it is a good time to buy or to take profits. So for example, let me say also, you're not always going to be right with that because there could be a variety of other factors that come in, but at least it gives you a good discipline and a good track to run on when you're looking at it from the big picture of quantitative investing, bringing it all down, then you do the fundamentals, looking under the hood, the details, the research, and then looking at the buy and sell points. Now, I'll tell you, for example, there was a few stocks that we held for quite a reasonable amount of time. One of them, Lumber Liquidators, has just shot up dramatically with the whole recovery of the housing. And we took some off, actually, on Friday. Tesla, which I told you that we are going to attempt, seemingly if it's going to kill us, to short this stock because of the very strange one-time fundamental inputs that they had on their most recent EPS postings at their earnings. Nobody seems to care. You know, everybody just likes the car. It's shiny. I'm mesmerized. It's a great car, by the way. I think it's really cool. Whether or not they're going to sell it at the level they're going to sell it, we'll see. But now, due to the constant onslaught of news, the safety records and all that, it seems that, you know, there's just a constant stream of buyers right now. And on Friday, we closed that position because it was starting to move up very dramatically over a very key resistance point. And once it hit there, you know what? We felt that, hey, it has a lot of upside. So we used the charts to actually find where the potential breakdowns were and the breakup and, you know, work your positions around that. Now, this is the second time we were in Tesla. The first time we made about 20 points. This time we lost about, I think, 9 or 9.5, maybe close to 10 points on it. So still, okay, we're ahead on the deal. Will we go long? Possibly, but you still have this underlying fundamental issue that's a problem. Now, does that matter? Not if you're Amazon, not if you're Netflix. It doesn't seem to matter. Not if you're Tesla. A lot of things can happen. Underlying fundamentals of Microsoft, but there was a big change. Underlying fundamentals still the same, but there's a difference in sentiment now that maybe there's going to be a change in the leadership. Very important to look at. The other things I want to mention is that, you know, you get your watch lists in order. Now, I want to look at this from a different side because this is something that has always been an area that I find that people really can't get a real good grasp around. So, you know, you want to have these stocks, but how many times, and I think I remember saying something like this maybe a year ago, but how many times have you had a stock and you did your research and you say, well, it's not at the price level that I want from a buy or a short standpoint. So what you do is you kind of like put it aside and you start working on some other things that are in front of you and maybe some other stocks that you like and you kind of forget about it a little while. Then next thing you know, you look at it and maybe a couple weeks go by, maybe a month, maybe a year, and you say, whoa, man, I should have done something about that. Or the opposite is you hold a stock and that stock moves in a way that it shouldn't and, you know, it's way against you. And maybe at first you said, you know what, I'll look at it a little while. I'm not going to just, you know, move out of it. The fundamentals are good. It's fine. I still have a profit in it. Then you look at it. Maybe you're distracted again, doing some other things. And for whatever reason, you're not a full-time trader and you're just, you know, minding your own business and letting your portfolio do its thing. And next thing you look and this thing just cratered. Well, what you need to do is you need to make sure that you have some kind of a platform, a system, something that gives you alerts that will be in your face, whether it's by text message, whether it's on your screen, whether it's an email. I don't care if it's a parrot in the corner screaming at you. Something that can have a annoyance factor that will give you a heads up as to what's happening so that whether or not it is immediate or sometime in the future that your price target that you were looking for hits, you can enter. Now, the other thing you could do, of course, is you could put in a pre-programmed trade. So you could put in a stop or a limit. You could do something there, of course. But you may want to consider what we call is soft alerts, whereas we're not putting in the actual stops, right? So we're putting in these alerts that give us some indication of directional move and whether we want to act on it or not. Now, we may say, you know what? We're not going to act on that right now. Well, you reset the alert. Now, there's a variety of different platforms out there that do it. Now, I'll tell you what I do. We have about three different platforms we could do it on here. We actually will do it through TradeStation because they have one of the things that I like is they have a variety of really annoying sounds and they can play continuously till you turn it off. So we have this ahuga that will come on very important items that we're leaving on and that we want to really focus in on. So that is very annoying. We also could do it with Bloomberg. That's something we can do, and that pops up. But something that pops up, something that tells you what's going on. Now, again, we really prefer some of these that can stand out and be in your face. But, you know, that's something that you'll have to decide on. But you could do this for a variety of things so that your research is really complete and you have an automated attendant telling you when this price is actually reached. Very important. Otherwise, you're going to let a lot of things slip through. And unfortunately, some of those are going to be probably very profitable if you did the work right to get to the point where you found a price target that you want to buy in on. And by the way, I'll mention, we're going to be doing a lot of work with TradeStation. We have, let me tell you, over at Trigger, Trigger Charts is where we have created a variety of trading indicators, algorithmically based trading indicators on many of the things that we talk about here. So for example, we're looking at key resistance and support levels. And we created an algorithm that looks at volume at price and price at volume and does a analysis to find where the pros, because that's who's really doing the bulk of the buying, where the pros are buying and really where they're holding the support and where they're actually letting it go. And if you could figure that out, and if you could find where those levels are, man, think about that. You have a great opportunity to catch some interesting opportunities on the upside or the downside. That's kind of the key to what we do over at Trigger Point Research, and we took that one step further, and we then created these indicators, which I got to tell you something. The programming is phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. If you have TradeStation, you can go over to the Strategy Network, and you can go over and get a free trial of the Radar, which is a market-based volume at price, and it looks at a time frame and gives you the thick areas of where there's really a lot of volume buying or selling and where there's support and resistance, and it's a beautiful-looking indication, much different than you've ever seen before because volume usually is a vertical move, and you look at a cross. This is exactly opposite, and it's right on the chart itself. Then we have the altimeter. The altimeter strips out all the extras from Radar, and it says, hey, you know what? I just want to know the key levels. I want to know the points where there is the highest probability for either resistance or support and where the potential is. Now, you can put those together and work those together, and that's great, and they'll work very well. The third thing is that there is something called autopilot. Now, autopilot really is a strategy-based trading algorithm that doesn't do an automatic trading, but what it does do, it gives you a very simple chart, gives you the highest probability based on the market profiles, the volume, the price, directional movement, and then it gives you buy and sell signals right on the chart, paints the chart the right color for green for moving on the upside and to indicate a initiation to a long. Gives you a warning, which is yellow. It also gives you a targeted price where you should move out to take your profits. And it works on stocks, ETFs, Forex, and futures. And it really, you really have to take a test drive of this and see what it's all about. I want you to see it. Now, we have the reason why I bring this up is that towards the end of September, we're going to be actually profiled and showcased over at TradeStation for all their clients. And I'll tell you more about that as it gets closer. So you could sign up and spend some time online, live going through this when we do present that. And then also, we're going to be having a series of webinars also that are going to introduce these various programs, kind of the, you know, introduction of what these indicators do. Now, what's really great about the timing of this is really cool. From now through the end of the year, TradeStation will give you their platform at no cost. Now, there's some fine print on that, and you got to check it out, but there's no cost to do so. And basically what you could do is then you could put our indicators on during the time when we're doing these webinars in September and October. The first one, I believe, is September 4th. I will, if you're not on our mailing list, you have to get on them. You need to make sure to sign up. You can go over to the Disciplined Investor and put your name in on the top right there for the mailing list or Trigger Point Research. Trigger Charts website will be up, I believe, on the 1st of September. We'll have all the registration there as well. And just make sure that you find a way to put your name into our mailing list. And if you have to and you can't do it, just send me an email. We'll get it in there somehow for you. But their platform is free, and you get at least the trials to take a look at for free of these various indicators, so you can kind of play along when we do our webinars. Now, there's even more. We have a special deal that we have that's going to be announced shortly. I'll tell you guys and gals. Basically, there is a rebate program going on that we have arranged with TradeStation that you can get the cost of your indicators paid for. Yep. So the cost of these indicators will be paid for by TradeStation, and then they're going to repay you. It's kind of the way they do this is they repay you through a rebate on all your commissions for, you know, a year. So what happens is essentially you get these indicators and you're trading anyway, so you got to pay they have low commissions on their trades, so you got to, you know, come out of this thing way ahead. So we'll announce all the details, really cool stuff happening with TradeStation and Trigger Charts. I'm very excited with that. Larry Williams has been doing a big job over there as well. And the great thing is that it's probably one of the best platforms I've ever seen, or it is the best platform, for charting and for research of technical analysis. You know, the canned things they have already in there, whether it's, you know, moving averages or MACDs or stochastic, all those kind of basic things, plus the things that you could put on top now with these kind of very sophisticated algorithms that, like we built, very, very cool stuff. Gets you as close as you can be to what the pros are doing than ever before. So make sure that, you know, you write this down, Trigger Charts or Trigger Point Research, you know, go to the Disciplined Investor, put your name in there somewhere, you know, and or just email me and we'll make sure that you are included in all this. And I'll tell you also next week a lot more about it. We'll be closer. We'll have the defined dates of all the different webinars coming up on all the different series. And we'll go through that. So that's kind of important. The other thing I want to mention is that I told you there's a lot of things kind of coming up. For your participation, next week we're going to start the closest to the pin. And you got to see some of the things we did for John and myself for DH Unplugged and how we're going to put this together. But basically, we're going to have a contest that's going to go on for about 10 weeks or so. And that each week there's a new stock and you'll be able to guess what you think the stock's price will be in approximately 2 weeks. And there's a little bit of a lag there due to the time frame of when you can actually put the entry in. It works perfectly. And we're going to give away some prizes, some things that you can, you know, the closest to the price at the date, at the time that we have prearranged, will get some great things. And you could do that. We'll tell you all about that on DH Unplugged this week. Sorry that we missed it last week. The other thing is that Trigger Point Research. This is also something that you need to do because it is starting to get to be the time where you need to get more actively involved in investing because you have a lot of potential for volatility movement. And when you have that, then the profitability potential goes up. is Trigger Point Research. Now, twice a week, actually for free, we've been publishing the setups. The setups are those stocks that are kind of looking like from it's taking the froth off of the entire list of, I don't know, 3,500 potential stocks that are either breaking down or potentially breaking up. Now, these are just setups. These are not actually at the point of getting where we would actually alert subscribers to this, but these are getting to a point that their patterns and their levels are getting within a range that is close. And if they do break, they have all the other factors that are involved could be very profitable. So we have that. We have videos twice a week over on YouTube and over on Trigger Point Research. You go to the right, to the little bit to the down in the sidebar there, and it says setups and setups videos. And if you, on the bottom of that page, if you put your name in and your email, you will automatically get those a couple times a week. At least, if nothing else, it's a great list to start looking at. Now, our subscribers get the best of those lists, so you have to subscribe to get those, but I'm just telling you that's the case. Finally, I'll mention, and then we'll talk about, we'll get back into the other thing. If you're kind of at a point where you think that, well, you know, should I be in the markets now? I really want to be in this, but I just can't pull the trigger. You know what I'm talking about. Or if you're thinking, hey, you know what? My current advisor, I'm not really sure if I really am happy with this, or if you're doing it yourself, whatever the case may be, check out the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, where we actually will go and have an open platform so you can see what's going on. We talk about what we're doing, what's on our mind in our private client blog. $50,000 minimum investment for that, which is down from our $500,000 traditional investment minimum for our global allocations. And this is a trading account, this is an aggressive account. And if you're looking to learn, if you're looking to invest, if you're looking for opportunities, this could be something where you want to, you know, put some money. We'll go short, we'll go long, we'll use options, ETFs, we'll hedge. All of that is part of this. So if you're looking for somewhere that may be uncorrelated to markets, you know, that may be something that you're looking to do. Go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Just click on the little button there on the right or the little blue screen. See the 12-minute virtual tour and then, you know, figure out if it's something you want. I think you'll be really interested in that. Now we have to skip right over to some of the things you need to know about for next week and for some time following. I thought we'd first talk about earnings and the truth about the actual earnings. We've been talking about the S&P 500 X financials for a while, but I thought what we'd do is take a look at the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the 30 stocks, because we have now seen the conclusion of this earnings season. 30 stocks have reported, and I thought I'd give you a full update of what has happened. Well, we saw what happened last week with a couple of names, but let's take a look at this. Well, we saw that on a total basis that the earnings or EPS surprises, they were beats by about 70% of the stocks. Now, in terms of sales, that was much different. There was actually about a 60% a number of the stocks that actually missed earnings. So downside surprise, that's pretty bad. But what are the real numbers? Well, overall, even though there was a number of companies that beat, and that looks good from a chart standpoint, when you look at the actual earnings, they came in down 1.19% and about 0.75% down on sales. The worst industries overall were the industrials in terms of sales surprises and information tech, and that probably was something to do with HP in there. And also, we can't forget about energy. As a matter of fact, energy companies, there's only two of them in the Dow Jones Industrials, but both of them were negative surprises by about 13% on EPS. Now, we did also see that the financials beat, 100% of them beat, four of them. They had a 12% positive surprise. But if we wipe those out, they pretty much offset each other. And from that point of view, you have to believe that if they're offsetting each other, the rest of the numbers are right. So does the Dow deserve to be higher than it was, let's say, last quarter? You got to think about that. If we're talking about earnings and we're talking about embedding in the prices based on the earnings potential and we see earnings coming down. As a matter of fact, if you look at the sales trend, We're going to put up a couple of charts on this week on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. When you look at this, you see that the trend has actually been going down. The peak of earnings on a quarterly basis was back in quarter three of 2011. Ever since then, it's been trailing down. We did see one pop in the fourth quarter of 2012. But aside from that, really, they've been trailing down in terms of the percent gain and the surprises, more importantly. The surprises have been coming in very dramatically. Last quarter, the surprises were the worst in terms of sales. And this quarter, they were the worst in terms of actually sales also. So in general, we saw about a 1% downside surprise in the earnings and in sales. And again, it is only 30 stocks, but there's fully 30 that have already reported. And maybe that's why we're seeing a little bit of doggishness, a little bit of sluggishness in those stocks this, you know, last several weeks and comparatively. Okay, how about we talk about, we'll come back to earnings in a second, talk about what's coming up next week. Really getting to the end cycle of this whole earnings season. Earnings season is one of those great times, by the way, that you can really make some money on trading because there's a lot of volatility. And if you're doing any kind of swing trading or even day trading, there is an opportunity that's built into that because you have a lot of disagreement on the price. When you look at what the price is compared to what the earnings are, the earnings outlook, guidance, and expectations, when you put that all into a nice, tidy package, you get a lot more volatility, especially the several days following the earnings reports. Let's talk about economic numbers that are happening next week because this is the final week of the year. It ends exactly, not the year, of the month. What am I talking about? It's the final week of the month, and we are ending the this Friday with the final number, which means that next Friday we're going to be having once again, the employment numbers are coming out. But let's talk about what we have coming up here. And there's a few things of real interest, and I think things that you need to pay attention to. Some of the things that have been a little bit ignored, because durable goods, one of the more important components of our exports in the U.S. and a big component of our economy. Last quarter was up 4.2%. But if you stripped out a lot of things and you looked at it, and you looked at stripping out the capital goods shipments of non-defense ex-air, we saw a negative 0.9%, so a drop pretty significantly. And overall, it was kind of a flat line. Now, this period, we're looking for a negative 4%. Now, what they're probably doing here is realizing that you can't repeat the number that we saw on the, air shipments. But we're looking at transportation on an X basis. So durable goods X transportation up 0.5%, 0.5%. And capital goods orders non-defense is only up 0.5. So we're looking for a drop in durable goods here. Now, manufacturing has been all over the place. We're seeing the Dallas Fed come out also on the 26th, looking for about a 4 on there. More importantly, we're going to be seeing the Case-Shiller numbers coming out on Tuesday morning. Now, the Case-Shiller numbers have been doing very well. We saw a 12% rise last month on a year-over-year basis. And we've been seeing a consistent move higher for the price of homes on the 20-city composite. Now, you'll see a lot of places showing the Case-Shiller numbers. You need to be aware that the one that really matters is the 20-city composite on a year-over-year basis. Monthly numbers are a little bit too volatile, noisy. You want to look at it a year-over-year. 12%. Nothing to be upset about there if it actually comes there. And the price index will be about 159. We're also going to be seeing consumer confidence. Now, remember we saw the University of Michigan confidence come out about 5 points lower than was expected and a pretty significant move. And that's where a lot of the concern came into what's going to be happening with retail and what's going to be happening with the consumer. Well, this index from the conference board is going to be coming out. And we're looking for about a 79. That's a drop from about 80.5 last period. Mortgage applications, we've been watching those. They've been coming down significantly as we have been seeing a drop in the bond prices and an increase in the yields overall. Now we have some pending home sales coming up. Flat month-to-month is the expectation. They were down about 0.5% last month. Initial jobless claims are looking to come in about 330 again. But then we have some GDP numbers coming in. We have the the GDP annualized quarter over quarter for the secondary reading, and looking for about a 2.2%, whereas 1.7% on the initial read. Remember, that was a pretty good disappointment back then. We also have the price index coming in, which is a core inflationary pricing index that's coming in at about 0.7. Not much change there. Personal consumption, that's going to be important because that's, you know, how much of the GDP was related to the consumption of individuals. You know, the number here, we're talking 1.8%, it's really not gone anywhere. It's been holding pretty well. But then we have at the end of the week, the personal income and personal spending. Now, personal income looks like it's going to be dropping again. It's been kind of like flatlining to a little bit down, up about 0.2%. And then we also have the personal spending that is expected to drop from 0.5 to a 0.3% month over month. In other words, nothing, not much going on there. We're going to end it off with the University of Michigan is going to be coming out with their final reading for August, expecting 80.5 from 80. Remember, there was an expectation of about 85 the first time around. Let's kind of wrap some of this up with the earnings that I want you to pay attention to. I'm going to be putting this up on thedisciplinedinvestor.com, but I want to kind of go over some of these numbers that you really want to pay close attention to. You got a company called Workday, which is a company that is relatively new. I want you to watch that, WDAY. TiVo is also going to be coming out. Movado. Movado I want you to look at from the aspect of, okay, high-end luxury jewelry. Let's see how they go. Estimates are about 32 cents on about $134 million of revenue. Then we got Williams-Sonoma, Tilly's, Guess, The Fresh Market, TFM. Watch them. Expectations for 32 cents on $350 million overall. Campbell Soup, boring stock, but Campbell Soup is looking for 42 cents on $1.8 billion on the 29th. Now, what's important about that and what's important to really recognize about that is that you have a concept that there could be if the economy is slowing, people start buying things like soup. Matter of fact, we saw Spam sales go through the roof back in the 2008-2009 period. So watch Campbell Soup. Let's see what they have to say about the overall economy looking out. We have Salesforce.com coming out. Now, last week, Salesforce.com quietly, not many people knew, they had a big problem with a number of their components. One of the servers really went down for about 2.5 days. We're going to be seeing about 8 cents on $938 million of revenue. Analysts have actually increased their EPS ratings over the last 4 weeks, but dropped their sales numbers. I'm a little bit concerned about this because there's some competition in the market right now. We're using Salesforce. We actually went to Salesforce not too long ago. What a bear. It's very difficult unless you're, at least in my opinion, if you want to do anything that's beyond the basics, and it's really not built for anything smaller than, a 50-person company, I think, because you have so many of the built-in things that are built for B2B. But Salesforce.com, I would watch this stock. Is trading about, 42 and change right now, and looking for only 8 cents per share. Now, unless they come out with something dramatic here, I don't know what is going to be the driver for this stock. Krispy Kreme Donuts, going to be coming out 14 cents on 112 on the 29th. Omnivision, now this is a stock that's been all over the place, but it has a lot to do with smartphones and handhelds. OVTI, trust me, it's going to be volatile. Now, Joseph Banks is going to be coming out on the 29th also. One of the big issues there is that there was some downside guidance already, and I'm not sure really what we're going to see difference here, but analysts obviously have reduced their EPS down about 35% over the last 4 weeks, and the same thing for sales. So we'll put the whole list up to Carnival, Corinthian, all these companies, and we'll put them up for you to take a look at. You can use it as a cheat sheet and check it out. Well, that's about it, kids, for this episode. I thank you for joining me. Hopefully, we learned a little bit about some of the tools that you can be using and some of the things you need to be doing about watch lists, some of the stocks that are going to be popping and rocking, and ways for you to get some great ideas in terms of making some investment lists. So I want to thank you for joining me, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.